Welcome to Combox. Jared Kimber here to do a podcast on wagon wheeling, which is our podcast where we answer your questions on cricket. So it's our podcast, but we answer your questions. You can put them up in the Super Chats. I probably won't have a lot of time for Super Chats today, but generally what people do, you know, the cool people, the people that you want to, that you admire, that you want to be involved with, what they actually do is they get us questions beforehand. And they do this by the medium of Patreon. I just realized we don't have the questions from last week. So I just need to contact Rakshit and tell him that. But anyway, PJ says, Patreon is Good Areas Podcast. So you can find us there. You can go over there and do all the things that you want to do. Blah, 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 blah. It's lots of fun. We love it. We should do more of it. But PJ says, how good was the 12th man? Could we ever see something like that today? Or do we like proper characters and distinct voices in the Combox? Lol. Well, for starters, you can have the bastard barred from this part of the broadcast area. So for those who don't understand, the 12th Man tapes, and I think that's how they started, was tapes, is probably one of the more unique bits of cricket culture ever. It really is a fascinating one. So the Channel 9 commentary team becomes so famous in Australia, but also kind of globally, as this, the first really, I don't know, meme-worthy, popular, however you want to put it, commentary team. And because it's the same people over and over and over again, and because they were triangular series, quadrangular series occasionally as well, Australia had multiple, you know, were playing lots of test series. I don't know if the World Cup played a part because they might not have been as involved in the World Cup as well, but there's like a lot going on in this period of time. And so the Channel 9 commentary team become kind of celebrities. Like, it was a very common thing even before the 12 man tapes to, you know, to do imitations of them, right? Like, they just were really famous for cricket commentators in a way that even like Harsha Bogle or Ravi Shastri isn't now. And that's just because there's more media now and everything else. Not that those guys aren't incredibly famous. So you have a whole radio comedy album, narrative album about the secret lives of these commentators that becomes huge. It wasn't just the cricketers, but the cricketer ones were the most famous. They also did the Wide World of Sports broadcast team as well. I don't think anyone really expected it to get as famous as it did. I think the song that Richie Beno, or the fake Richie Beno, sings, like, charted on the Australian thing. I still get people come up to me in the UK and talk about them. Like, they were, it was very, very popular over there as well. So it was a little bit racist. It was misogynistic. It had lots of swear words in it. It was very edgy comedy for cricket at that time. I think it's just remarkable that it existed, that you could have a career on the back of imitating cricket commentators and then make a radio narrative out of it. So we're not talking about that. There's that guy on Instagram at the moment who does some of that. He is imitating those players, but he's not, or those commentators, but he's not really adding anything to them, right? It's just interesting that he has the ability to do that. In Billy Birmingham's case, the 12th man's case, he is making complete personalities for these people. In some cases, I don't even think he'd met them, right? Like, he's just inventing these alter egos, a little bit like the spitting image puppets, I suppose, that was very popular in England at the time. And people just absolutely loved it. And like, it really did affect how we thought about the commentators. It was a very, very weird situation. I don't think we could ever have anything like that again, because I don't think we'd ever have... We can have other versions of the 12th man, but the 12th man, as it was, is a very weird point of history where everyone knew who the Australian commentators were, and then we were all excited to have swearing and everything else. It's probably one of the few times that we kind of had anything genuinely cool made out of cricket as well. So it's a fascinating one. Ajit says, how do you think teams like Afghanistan, Ireland, Zimbabwe should actually prepare for test matches since they're playing so infrequently, especially against bigger teams? They don't really, you know, I mean, I don't think there's anything special that they need to do. They just need to play cricket. Like, There's no magic answer to this, Ajit. In the case of Zimbabwe and Ireland, I think they have quite good mini first-class structures. So they're playing there. They need to probably organise events against first-class teams from other countries or A teams or whatever that may be, and everything else. So, yeah, those are the sorts of things that they have to do. But there's not like a magic thing, right? Look, when it comes down to it, as someone who's done, you know, the history of Test cricket, generally you have some kind of success when you have world-class bowlers available to you, right? And if you look at those three teams at the moment, I think Zimbabwe are not far away from having world-class bowlers, but they probably don't have enough of them. Afghanistan don't always get access to their world-class bowlers, which is not ideal. And Ireland really don't, like Mark Adair is their best bowler. How many other test teams in the world is Mark Adair getting in? Like, I think he's a really good cricketer, but how many other test teams would he even get into, right? So you can prepare as much as you want. If you don't have people who have the ability to take test wickets, I think that's a big problem. I think even when they had someone like Tim Murtagh at Ireland, you can't go through Tim Murtagh, right? Like, you kind of have to go around him a little bit because he's so accurate. And so someone like him, I think, is a much better player to have than perhaps someone who's faster and more test bowlery. So when it comes down to it, I think the kind of bowlers that you have are going to dictate that. And then, you know, I don't want to say that batting doesn't matter at all, but then the batting becomes, you can't win test matches unless you could take 20 wickets. So if you have the ability to take 20 wickets, even if you have a poor bowling lineup, you can still do something. Where are we here? Abe says, which do you think was the most fragile, successful team in cricket history? I mean, a team that achieved a lot, won major series of tournaments and looked dominant overall, but depended on a narrow set of conditions for their success. Things like a few irreplaceable players, home advantage, a risky tactical format. If you remove one or two pieces, the whole thing might have fallen apart. That's a really, really good question. I mean, most of the teams who have been successful in test cricket have not been particularly fragile, right? Because you need to be quite a robust team to be good home and away consistently. I mean, I think when Pakistan got to number one in the world, you could probably make an argument that team was a little bit more fragile at times than some of the other teams who've been number one in the world. But there are probably lots of like moments where teams have become number one for a short period of time that are a little bit fragile. I can't think of that many teams who've kind of dumb-lucked it in test cricket, ODI cricket. I mean, I suppose you could make an argument that the India team of 2011, like, they were probably at the start of this whole run of home teams doing very well in World Cups, where previously no one ever had. So, and they were terrible in the World Cup before that, and they were terrible in the World Cup after that, but they do win the Champions Trophy in 2013. So, yeah, so I don't know if I'd quite have them there either. Yeah, it's a good question, Abe. I don't know if I have a great answer on that. Who is the worst successful team? I'll be thinking about that. Let me screenshot that and come up with that for later. Mob says, why did you suddenly get some time back in your schedule? I'm not sure what that means. I've been really busy. When we're in Dubai, I think I did one wagon wheel there. And then we recorded something like 40 podcasts, me, Deepak, Rob, and Robbie. So we were quite busy there. Obviously, we were, you know, getting ready for the Stars Play event and everything, which was a huge success, but took a lot of time and effort. You know, we're still meeting investors, trying to, you know, organize our funding and all sorts of things. There's a lot going on at Combox at the moment. I think in the future, I mean, I'll continue to do wagon wheel for quite some time, but it's probably going to be a little bit up and down and sideways when it comes about. Even today, you know, I don't have as much time as I would want. Jeremy says, at this point, what is your prediction for how successful Cam Green's test career will be and what should Australia try to do to maximise his success? My big concern with Cam Green is just, I don't know. He obviously had an LBW issue. And he kind of changed that and has ended up with a bold issue. He's not a particularly good runner between wickets. So there's lots of like little micro problems that he has in his batting, which when he gets to 28, 29, he could just sort out and then he could be a fantastic cricketer for like 4 or 5 years. His bowling is very similar in that the raw components of Cameron Green's bowling are fantastic. Until he works out what length he wants to bowl consistently, I don't really see the point of Cameron Green. There's no point in Cameron Green trying to bowl like Ben Stokes, and I feel like he is trying to bowl like Ben Stokes. He should try and bowl like, you know, the S-tier version of Jacob Oram or Tom Moody and just be like, okay, I'm going to bowl the same ball over and over again, but it's a really good ball and I'm really tall and you are just going to have to handle it. It's possible with maturity, all these things iron out. So he could still be a fantastic cricketer. But what he's going to be now is another one of these all-rounders who has many wishy-washy years, and then you hope for the great 5 years. Jadeja's the most recent example of that, right? He's gone on to have a pretty good career. Okay. Manon says, how much more international is batting? How much more intentional is batting compared to bowling? Feel like a lot more batting is choosing what exactly to do versus bowling is more about putting it in the right areas and hoping the batter makes a mistake. Makes people want to be a batter more than a bowler. There's a constant feedback loop in batting that I think makes people want to be a batter more than a bowler, which is everything is about you. And every time you make a run, there is a small ripple of applause, right? Or, you know, your teammates are happy for you. So I do think, all things considered, that there are lots of reasons why it makes more sense to be a batter. Not to mention that we fetishize batters more, right? So you want to be in that group. So I do think there's a few different elements of it. I think in bowling, you are more often than not just putting the ball in your line and length. And then batters are making a decision of what to do from that. So there's more probably decision-making in batting than there is in bowling. So yeah, I could kind of see it from that point of view, but I think most people want to be batters just because it's the glamour position. Hurt says, how should Crystal Palace manage a player like Rishabh Pant? We all know what his ceiling looks like and how entertaining he is to watch. He suits the power play technically if he's not firing. Do you bench him or push him down the order and accept mediocre returns? Crystal Palace. I'm not sure why Crystal Palace is here. I think with Rishabh Pant, what you try and do now is try and get him on a cheaper contract next year and you take a flyer on rehabbing him. The problem is that he kind of needs to go off and work out all of his issues on his own. I would probably match him up with, I don't want to say someone like AB de Villiers, but you know, someone like Brad Hodge, or I'm trying to think of someone else like this. Who else is out there? Faf du Plessis. Like someone who is a player and a coach and has done it before, and to be like, okay, our role now is to just make you the best Rishabh Pant you can be. Let's find a method from here and go from there. That's the way I would use him, right? So I think he makes more sense in the power play, but that's only if he can handle the new ball, and he hasn't really shown the ability to handle a new ball. So what if we just prepared him for the next 10 months when he's not playing test cricket to face the new white ball, right? And if he disagrees with that, it's like, okay, so should you bat 6 or 7, right? Like, what's the option? Where do you want to go? And the problem here is that if he leaves his franchise, and I don't know if he's going to, but if he does leave his franchise, like, he's kind of doing all this on his own, and then he might get picked up by a team that's like, no, we want you to bat 3. That's the problem with where he is at the moment. If he stays at Lucknow, and Lucknow are happy to eat the contract for a little bit longer, then the conversation, and it'll probably be with a new coach, but the conversation has to be, exactly where do you want me to play? Give me 10 months to be ready to do that. Josh shares, as an outright base supporter, I've been hoping for Kane Williamson to finally have a dominant series in England and later Australia, possibly retrospectively qualifying for a high rank in the art of batting. If he has an abysmal series, but his standings and does not reach 50 once, could the opposite be true for his art of batting? Batting ranking. No, I don't think he would go any lower. I'd have to have a look, Josh, to see who's around him. I'm pretty happy with where he is at the moment. I think he's earned that position. He's going to end up with, we just did a whole podcast with the Combox crew about him. He is a fascinating cricketer, right? Like, because we all know how good he is and we also all know the caveats. And he seems to have a higher level of caveat than the other three in the Fab Four. Even, and Virat Kohli has some incredible caveats at times, right? I don't think I would push any of those players down. I think I looked at it as if their career finished today, this is where they would end up. And so I gave a lot of leeway to Virat, to Kohli, to Greenwich, I want to say. I'm trying to think of some of the others, who had long tails on their careers. Because I'm really looking at that, the strength of what they achieved rather than the negatives. Like I look at it more of what have you, how many years were you good? How many years were you great? Right? You know, how much did you dominate in that period? I don't think I would then bring Williamson down, but I'm with you. I kind of wanted him to make runs. Obviously that first pitch was not ideal. I do think he can go up though. I'm with you. If he had two magnificent series, just don't see that happening, sadly. Happy to be wrong. Very happy to be wrong in his case. Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible now. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN. PJ says, what percentage of my Patreon money is now going towards your shampoo and conditioner budget? My guess is at least 45%. I buy like 5-liter bottles of this stuff. We talked about this before. People have asked about this before. I don't know why. There's a lot of hair in my family. No one has short hair in our family. He could be like the shortest and he has a lot of hair as well. So I buy big, big bottles of these things and have them around. So I don't think it's cost me that much. I don't know if my hair will get that much longer. Basically, I don't know why people are so obsessed with my hair, but I was just trying to grow the front so that it went all the way back. And that's the length I was basically trying to get to. And I think it's almost there. I haven't been to the hairdresser recently, but I think it's always almost there. And then we'll move on. Then that'll be my hair for a while until I get bored again, which I quite often do. Sam says, to what extent is the IPL growth, particularly overseas, blocked by its structure? Daily games and the lack of any weekly cadence prevents the growth of a casual fan base who can check in weekly or bi-weekly for a roundup show. Seems like an important when the sport goes up against the business end of European football. I don't know, Sam, because American sports works that way, right? And it hasn't affected American sports that it's going on all the time. I think that we are not quite ready for cricket to be a, you know, to follow a league in another country. I think that causes a bit of a problem to the IPL. We're still not used to, even the IPL, outside of the people who sort of grew up with it and have it as their major thing, I think the average cricket fan is still just not used to a cricket game being on every day, right? And it's one of the reasons we all moan so much these tournaments go so long, because we're not used to it. So I do think there's an element of that. But I think as we go on, that will change. The weekly bi-weekly thing I do think is an interesting point, but I just think it's because the IPL is not covered correctly. I don't think that's because of the structure of the IPL. Abe says, just curious, what was it like hanging out with Srisanth again in Dubai? Given your big profile on him on Crickinfo some years ago, any cool reunion stories you're okay with telling us? Also, any plans to do an event like that in the US? So I saw him very briefly as he sort of came in and he was warm and everything, but I was like, maybe he doesn't remember me, right? And then he made it very clear that he remembered that piece and he wasn't particularly happy with it, but it helped inspire him. But one of the things he didn't like about the piece was the headline. I was like, well, I didn't write the headline. And it was funny because just before he'd come in, I'd looked it up. And when I saw the headline, I was like, that's a terrible headline. Like, that's not the headline I would have chosen for that piece. And if you read the piece, I don't think that's what I wrote. I can understand why Crickinfo went with that headline as well. But, you know, if you go through, more often than not, players are upset at you at headlines. And that's actually the easiest conversation to have with anyone. So there was a bit of awkwardness at the start, but we went on stage and we talked about it, right? Like, I thought I wrote, it's probably one of the best pieces I've ever written. I was really proud of it, but I also didn't write it for Srisanth, right? I wrote it because I thought his story deserved that kind of a treatment. But I don't write my pieces for the players, so I don't really expect the players to do that. But by the end, I think we got on really well. Look, I really like Sri. At one stage, Deepak was like, oh, Jared said that you and him got on really, really well. And this after Srisanth was moaning about the pizza. Srisanth's like, no, we had a great time. So, you know, look, Srisanth is one of the more interesting people I've ever met in my life. You know, just an arch character in every sense of the word. I loved being with him when I made that piece all those years ago. I had a lot of fun with him at the event again. We're both very opinionated people, so we're not always going to agree with each other. But I told him on stage, I said, it's probably the most memorable interview I've ever done with a player. And, you know, so for that, I thank him, but he's not going to always like the piece. As far as having events like that in the US, yeah, we would love to have events like that in the US. Time zones make it a bit trickier than in the US. But this was the first event of what we hope to be many. We want to have them all around the cricket world. And, you know, we include the US in that. Ajit says, Sachin Tendulkar suggested scrapping the impact player sub rule, splitting the power play into a batting and a bowling phase, and even allowing one bowler to bowl five overs in the T20 innings. Do you think these changes would actually restore balance between bat and ball? Would they just create new tactical loopholes? Well, the impact player rule, I think, has kind of already opened batters' minds. So it will probably keep the batting, the runs per over at a similar rate. They won't go down, is my guess. I don't understand why you would just allow a bowler to buy five overs. I think minimum would have to be six. I think you guys would all know. I don't even know if we need limitations on bowlers anymore. I don't really understand what he means by a batting and bowling thing. But if we keep the impacts up, I think we really have to think about the power play. But yeah, anything you find, players will find loopholes too. That's the players' jobs. But it's our job to make sure, well, you know, our job as a collective cricket community to make sure that cricketers are... The cricket is played at the right quality. So Greg Chappell wrote this piece the other day, and it's our job as a cricket community to basically, I'm summarizing what he said here, but it's also things I've kind of written before. It's our job to make sure that cricket doesn't get shit. That's not what Greg Chappell says. That's how I'm saying it. But that is the job, right? Cricket should not get shit. And every time cricket has sort of got a bit shit, we have tinkered with it a little bit. PJ says, now that the IPL is finally over, how about a red ball, white ball trade series? Give the people what they want. Yeah, we've got some more. I don't know if another one's come out, but me and Varun did one. I know Varun has got them in his mind. Me and Varun will probably do a couple. You know, we love doing them, so that won't be a problem. Hertz says, the new Michael movie has a 30% on the tomato meter, but 97% on popcorn meter. Using that as a frame, which test cricketers would you put in each category? Who has a 97% popcorn meter that the crowds love, but the analyst journalists did not rate highly? Oh, okay. That's a fascinating question, Hertz. Sourav Ganguly would be one, I think, off the top of my head, that probably a lot of people would question. Shikhar Dhawan in T20 cricket might be another one. I think of other players. I don't know if Mitchell Johnson would probably be on this, but like if you... No, it's probably not true of Mitchell Johnson. Chris Martin probably does have a 97% on popcorn-o-meter, but... Chris Martin's one that people really remember as being fantastic. And I love Chris Martin, but he didn't get any wickets, right? Where would Flintoff be? I don't think they'd probably be, I don't think any of those guys I mentioned would be as dramatic as what you've put, but those are the kinds of players. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else. Oh, I've got one. Romesh Kaluwatharanan. I'm not going to go through it now because I don't have a lot of time, but go through his stats one time. That man is mentioned in a lot of conversations and, I loved him. He's one of my favorite cricketers, but he did not do a lot in cricket. Shiva says, any thoughts on CSK? Could Shane Watson or DK be good candidates as the head coach role? Who do you think are the up-and-coming coaches? I don't know about head coaches. I don't know if DK would leave RCB. I think he's got a pretty sweet deal. I don't know if Watto wants to be a head coach. I've got no issue with CSK. Well, I think CSK fans... I think there's like two camps of them. There's one camp is like, actually, we're coming through. Things are going well. We got a bunch of young players. Let's see how we go in the future. And there's a lot of other people like, why are we not playing better? We're not playing better because you're blooding youngsters, even not as much as you should be. And then you had a bunch of injuries. I don't think this was a bad year for CSK. Coaches coming through. Obviously, Jonathan Trott, I think, is a fascinating one. I'm trying to think of anyone else. Kane Williamson, I suppose, will be another fascinating one soon. there any sort of coachy coaches? James Foster is another one I would keep an eye on. Ajinkya Rahane would be another one I would keep an eye on. Those are the names off the top of my head anyway. Pajara? Browse, I really doesn't want to browse today. New Zealand, Josh says, in the test, New Zealand played Ireland. The bowling lineup was Smith, Folkes, Tickner, Sears, Fox, Croft. Missing bowlers include Henry, Duffy, Jameson, O'Rourke, Santner. Also Ajaz, yep. Is there a case that New Zealand has the deepest test bowling lineup right now? Would you pick any of the bowling lineup that beat Ireland in New Zealand's current best 11? I suppose you could make an argument for Smith. It's a deep bowling lineup. I'm not sure that how much I rate Folkes. Like now, Tickner, I don't rate as a test bowler. Sears, I'm interested in. Foxcroft, I don't know enough about. And he's probably a batter, isn't he? Or at least an all-rounder. But Henry, Duffy, Jameson, O'Rourke, Santner, and Ajaz is really, really good. We did a podcast on New Zealand bowling, which should be out very soon, Josh, if it isn't out already. Because basically what I was saying is I think they have some issues with their batting. But if you look at their bowling, they're a really dangerous side. So yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I think there's a lot of options. I've been watching Smith over the last, 3 years now, and I feel like he's gets better every time I watch him. So he's the one I really like of that Ireland lot. Shulpak says, it's ridiculous that England have a three-test series against New Zealand and Australia against South Africa, but India only has a two-test series against South Africa and New Zealand. Two worthy opponents and for the test championships. I realise this is a commercial issue. Anyway, around this India... I think if you're managing India at the moment, you're probably trying to limit the amount of games they're playing, honestly, just because there's so much cricket around. Look, for a long time, Australia didn't play New Zealand in Test series. England used to play them in 3 days. There are different periods of times when teams go through more popular. I mean, Australia used to play West Indies in 5 Test series, right? Like, at a certain point, the commercials and also the popularity in that country of the opposition is what changes things around. There's not much you can do about that. I don't think you can hype it up. It just sort of happens naturally, is my guess. I could be wrong. Maybe there is a way, but Ian says, England have recalled Ollie Robertson on the back of a pretty mediocre start to the County Championship. Is this just an admission that they were wrong to drop him in the first place and they don't have any better options? Yes. It's basically, I would have picked him or Anderson for England. Obviously, I kept talking about Anderson, but you could have swapped Robertson in for that as well. They needed a bowler who bowls low economy. They needed a bowler who was an adult who just bowls it the right spot over and over again. They needed a new ball bowler. All these things they needed for Australia they didn't have. And they probably needed for a little while, right? Especially since Wokes, his body started to fall apart. They went back to Robertson because he has tried to get fitter, and I think they're aware of that. He has been working really hard, which again, they like. He's still not exactly fitting in what they want to do, but they don't have another option, right? And especially if Jofra won't play, and you don't really want Jofra to be your stock bowler either, right? So they picked him because they realized they had made a mistake in not picking him, but also because he had made genuine effort, is my understanding, to get himself into a better position. Sam says, what do you think the England men's test team need to change the most after the Ashes debacle? The thing that irritated me the most is they seemed incredulous on a cricket tour that they would be expected to play cricket. Yes, they like the status and the entertainment of being international cricketer, but they don't seem to, they could take or leave their playing part of it. I think there are lots of good things that they have done over the last couple of years under Stokes, Key and McCullum that they can continue to use and that has helped them as a cricket team. But I think they need to be really honest in the things that they have done that have not done that. They are not the most talented team in the world. They are going to struggle for the next couple of years and then hope that a bunch of young players come in and that changes very quickly. But as it stands at the moment, take what's working and add to it. And I don't think they did that. I think it's almost as simple as that. They've also decided that certain people are their people and certain people are not their people. I think you can do that if you're like the New Zealand rugby union team, right? If you're the All Blacks, you can do that. I don't know if you can do that if you're a flawed cricket team who doesn't have any batting, right? Dom Sibley probably should be in the test team now. Just pick him because he's good at batting now. Better than when he played in test cricket. Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumper turned the Nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting. Gaji says, in this year's IPL was very bid. Almost felt fatigued towards the end of the tournament. What could they do to make it more entertaining? There was a lot of one-sided games. The only way around that is to make it scores lower, which is hard to do now, and that artificially brings it more close games, or play more than one game a night. If you play two games a night, you are doubling your chance of an exciting game. And I understand why the IPL, when it was set up, didn't want to do that. And I understand why it's still hard now because we don't have that many teams. But when it comes down to it, it felt like there were 6 or 7 game stretches where there wasn't a good game. You cannot have that. You can't have 6 or 7 days without a good game of cricket. And there's no real reason for the IPL to do that. Neil says, how much is the Indian team utilizing their current analyst? Harry, Gambier has publicly on various occasions said that he doesn't use data. I don't know. I've never met Harry, I don't think. So I don't want to speak for him or anything. But if I'm an analyst of a team and I hear a coach do that, I probably look for a new job. Josh says, which current English bowlers would you play over Henry, Duffy, Jameson, O'Rourke? Jofra would get into that lineup. Wouldn't be Atkinson. Probably don't need Robinson if you have Henry and Jameson. Oh, I think O'Rourke or Josh Tung. I think they do similar kinds of roles. Like, I kind of like O'Rourke more, but I'm warming up more and more in the last 6 months to Tung as well. I'm warming up to Tung. Put that on the t-shirt. Mob says, assuming Henry, O'Rourke, Jameson are locked in the bowl at Lords. Oh, this was beforehand because I didn't get to the last questions. Who are you picking to round out that pace bowling attack? Duffy wasn't available, obviously, but so I would have picked Duffy, but without Duffy, I would have picked Smith there. My only problem with Smith is on a track where you need... the problem with Smith is going to be on an attack where you don't just need new ball kind of bowling. I want to see more on flat pitches. Neil says, form, what is it? What is being in form and being out of form beyond the number of runs? How do you get back in form? Form is no different, Neil, than everything you do in your life. I, thanks to neurodiversity, make the same breakfast every single day. Right, I go through periods of time about 7, 8, 10 days in a row where the breakfast is absolutely perfect the way I want it. And then I have 2 or 3 days in a row where it's not, it's too dry, it's too moist, whatever. It's, you know, overcooked, it's undercooked, it's, I put too much of one thing in there or whatever. It's getting to a point where it's almost subconscious that I'm doing it correctly. That is form. Technically, I'm doing everything correctly. Mentally, I'm in a really good space. I think we talk about form in sport, but form is anything. If you've ever done any job, you will know the same thing. You can get in and out of form in an office job. We just use it more when we're talking about sport. Sam says, the TV coverage in the UK of the IPL has regressed, as in Sky just put matches on with no additional programming. Do you think they should make more of an effort with the coverage? When it first started broadcasting, ITV had rights. Yeah, they went all in, but I don't think they spent a lot of money either. Yeah, so I think when ITV did it, they weren't paying a lot of money for the rights. So I'm assuming Sky is paying a bit of money for the rights. The thing with the IPL is the time that it is on, it's actually better for a free-to-air provider than it is for a pay TV subscriber. People aren't really in the UK, you know, going to watch sport on pay TV between the hours of 3 and 6:30, right? So maybe they'll watch the end of the games on Sky. So what's the point in putting a lot of production values around it? Would be how Sky is thinking about it, is my guess. Whereas with ITV, it was on free to air, and they found a whole new audience of kids who came home from school to watch it. I think that's probably what Sky should do, is aim younger and try and recreate that. But it is harder to do that on free to on pay TV than it is on free to air. But you're right. I mean, sometimes they'll show like the after match stuff forever, right? When the next game has started, like there's some really bad production around the IPL on Sky at the moment. Mob says, what does it mean for a player who's been riding the bench the entire IPL to walk out and start smashing test hundreds, perform internationally the day after the IPL finishes? Is there a kind of opportunity cost, the way of quantifying the value of unused bench potential? Look, it comes back to the question we had a minute ago from Neil about form, right? This player might not have been used at all in the IPL, but they could be seeing the ball really well, or the ball's coming out really well, or they're in really good rhythm, but their IPL team doesn't need them. And the opposite could be happening. Some people need to play a lot of cricket, like Courtney Walsh, right? And some people need to have a lot of rest. And so that's kind of how that would work for most players. Abe says, sorry for yet another, you've probably already answered this, but I mean, that's everything, Abe. But India's produced many great test fast bowlers in recent years, but they've been overwhelmingly right-armers. Meanwhile, Pakistan seems to have much stronger tradition for left-arm paces. I'm curious if you have a theory on why this is. Actually, India had an incredible run of left-arm bowlers, right? They had Zahir Khan, RP Singh, Ashish Nira, Irfan Pathan, all in a row. Zahir Khan was a fantastic bowler. So there was a period of time where India had a lot. The real question, Abe, is why the West Indies, South Africa, and England struggle so much with left-arm bowlers. That would be my question. And I have absolutely no answer to why that is. And no one's ever come up with something. But that's the one that I'm more interested in. And a lot of those Indian fast bowlers were trying to be Wasim Akram, hilariously. So I think the reason that India and Pakistan have had so many left-arm bowlers is Wasim Akram is Wasim Akram. Chris says, is Australia about to go through a huge ODI regression? Feels like depth is gone with Smith and Stark retiring. Look, I think no matter which way you look, Chris, Australia is not replacing fast bowlers in any of the three formats, right? I really like Nathan Ellis, right? But I think he's more of a T20 bowler. Jai Richardson can't get fit. You know, their backup bowlers, no matter where you look, are just not particularly doing very well at the moment. And so I don't think this is just a one-day thing. I think we could see this right across the board. Aravind says, looking into next year's IPL with RCB glasses on, if a franchise could add just one more player to the current squad, what exact profile that player would look like? An attacking spinner? I don't think it matters what kind of spinner, but they do need a spinner that is... deserves four overs a game. Suyash doesn't. He can get four overs on a good day, but they need to upgrade. If they upgraded the spinner, that team would be incredible. The converse way of doing that is to find a Jamie Overton or Jason Holder type a bowler who can do it with seam, and they can play it in that direction. But they need a better middle orders bowler. Ali says, do you see teams finding and drafting a pure wicketkeeper from the club street cricket, since every wicketkeeper batter now is in professional and domestic cricket? I have done a piece on this, Ali, many years ago, that I think the next big change in wicketkeepers is probably going to be a freak outlier, and they will not come from the professional game, is my guess. Whether they come from the street cricket or club cricket, I'm not sure. It might even be that where if we bring in, you know, substitutions, that's how it happens. But my guess is there will be a swing back to wicketkeeping has got so poor, right? And it does not need to be that poor. I honestly believe there are better wicketkeepers outside of international cricket than there are inside international cricket by a huge factor. Ajit says, what does long-term planning really mean for IPL franchises if there is a mega auction every 3 years? How would you go about it? So essentially, you're looking at keeping 4 to 6 players as a core. So what you're trying to do is build a, 6 to 8 year plan where all of those players will be hitting some kind of their peak at the same time, that you can build around them. So you can move the interchangeable pieces around them. That's kind of what you look at. What does your pitch do? How can you get players that will do that and keep that kind of a core? That's generally what teams are trying to do, knowing that sometimes it will go wrong and some of those players will go missing. Cam says, I've recently heard about a one-day declaration matches in England, and that there are a popular format of club matches there. 20 years of playing club cricket in Australia, I've never heard of that format. Did you ever play it in Australia? And if you have played it in the UK, what do you think of it? So in Australia, you can declare in 2-day games, which is obviously very, very normal. But 1-day games are limited overs games, so there's no declarations. Yeah, I have played in those games before. Generally, what happens is really defensive teams just bat on forever and get themselves into an awkward position. And I didn't enjoy it at all. Shipback says, what are the 2-3 biggest refinements that you expect McCullough to make the England team? Well, I mean, I think they're going to value good cricket skills over just potential best ball players. I think that's the big difference, Shilpak, that we will see. But I'm not sure how long they'll be around anyway. Arvind says, recently I got my wife to try out Drive to Survive on Netflix. And up to that point, she had no interest in motor racing. Yeah, that's very, very common. It got me thinking about whether something like this would work for cricket. Many of us have tried. It's a very hard thing to get across. The test is probably the closest one. It's very hard to get these things. But yes, I've been talked to about, and I know lots of people have tried it. Ali says, just finished the Acquired podcast about the IPL. What did they miss and or get wrong, in case you listened to it? Yeah, I did a whole video on it. They got lots of things wrong. I think one thing they got wrong is the one game a night. I can understand why they were excited by it, but they kind of misunderstood how that was going. Yeah, they got lots of things wrong. I couldn't give you the full list of it, but they got a lot of things right. And they also came at it from non-cricket eyes, which I thought was really, really interesting as well. So, I thought they did a brilliant job. They did a better job looking at the IPL than most people ever have in cricket. And I think that's something that we need to be thinking about in cricket as well. Let me just quickly go through the super chats. Prudvi says, adding to what you said, my father's a casual cricket viewer and doesn't try to understand watching IPL. Loves watching India and talking about how Chetan Chauhan bats for 200 balls without scoring. Yeah, there's plenty of different cricket fans out there. And I think that's one thing we always have to keep remembering. Andy says, what's the most effective way for slow left armers to take wickets against right-handers in India during the DRS era? You just pitch the ball on off stump or middle stump over and over again, and some slide through and some don't. I mean, that's kind of how it works. Mix up your pace, mix up the undercutters and normal ones. And Andy says, does RCB beat a full strength India on a road? I don't think so, but I'd need to think about that. No, I don't think so. That is it. Me done for the day. Thank you, everyone on Wagon Wheel. And we will see you again here on Combox very soon. Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Ruckshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.